This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tom O'Neill. As the worldwide death toll from coronavirus surges past 1 million, U.S. President Donald Trump is trying to persuade the country's governors to reopen schools with the announcement of a shipment of millions of rapid coronavirus tests to states this week.
These new Abbott rapid point-of-care tests are easy to use and return results within just minutes. You'll have a result at a maximum 15 minutes. Machine, no machine is required to process them.
The federal government plans to ship 100 million tests to states over the next several weeks. The move to dramatically expand testing comes just 5 weeks before the November elections, as Mr. Trump continues to face criticism for his handling of the coronavirus. The rapid tests from the Abbott laboratories can be used outside of medical facilities, but experts warn that they are less accurate and are harder to track than older laboratory tests. Republican President Donald Trump and his Democratic challenger, former Vice President Joe Biden, are set to debate one-on-one for the first time Tuesday night. Their first of three debates takes place 5 weeks ahead of the November 3rd election. Biden has maintained about 7 percentage points advantage over Mr. Trump in national polls for weeks. If he wins, Mr. Trump would be the only the third U.S. president in the last four decades to lose his bid for re-election. But the race is close in several key battleground states, meaning Mr. Trump could once again lose the popular vote, as he did in 2016 against Democrat Hillary Clinton, and still win the Electoral College vote to claim victory. More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. Pakistan's Supreme Court has accepted an appeal by the family of slain American journalist Daniel Pearl, seeking to keep a British-born Pakistani man on death row over the beheading of the Wall Street Journal reporter. The court on Monday delayed until next week hearing the appeal over the lower court acquittal of Ahmed Omar Saeed Sheikh. Sheikh had been on death row since his conviction in 2002 over Pearl's killing. He'd been convicted of helping lure Pearl to a meeting in the southern Pakistani port city of Karachi when he was kidnapped. A former Louisville police detective pleads not guilty to charges related to the shooting of Breonna Taylor, AP correspondent Mike Gracia.
Former Louisville Metro Police Detective Brett Hankison, who was indicted last week on three counts of wanton endangerment in the Breonna Taylor case, pleaded not guilty Monday. Hankison was indicted for firing shots into the home of Taylor's neighbors. The grand jury declined to indict Hankison or two other undercover narcotics officers with the fatal shooting of Taylor. That triggered protests in Louisville and other cities. Taylor was shot multiple times in a March 13th narcotics raid after her boyfriend opened fire as officers entered her home. The boyfriend said he didn't know who was entering and fired in self-defense. I'm Mike Gracia.
Countries once subjugated to Western power spoke out about still stinging scars of colonialism at this year's UN General Assembly. Several leaders evoked global protest inspired by Black Lives Matter and renewed demands for reparations for the slave trade. Others brought up unresolved territorial disputes left over from colonial times. Rwanda's president said the global movement for racial justice is not a passing phenomenon. Sierra Leone's president gave world nations a 10-year deadline to wrap up the colonial era. Antigua and Barbuda said that ex-colonizers should forgive poor country debt as the pandemic pummels economies, and many call for more equal relationships on the global stage. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte said on Monday that Facebook could not stop him from promoting the objectives of his government. His remarks follow Facebook's move on September 22nd to dismantle a network of fake accounts that originated in China and the Philippines, including some that criticized the Communist Party of the Philippines and its armed wing, the New People's Army. Facebook linked some of the fake accounts in the Philippines to the military and the police, although they denied being account holders. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Critics say the nomination process of the AU Commission chairperson is undemocratic.
I would say, and my organization say, that Faki Mahama is a failure. He is not somebody that should lead Africa for another 4 years, and we want a change.
Tanzania's Elections Commission summons the main opposition presidential candidate today, Tuesday. The UN Conference on Trade and Development calls for action on illegal financial flows out of Africa. A new report shows egregious corruption by public officials of the previous Sierra Leone government. And Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta announces new COVID-19 measures.
One, that the nationwide curfew enforced throughout the territory of the Republic of Kenya is extended for a further 60 days. Two, that the commencement time for the nationwide curfew is varied from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m.
An opposition member of Liberia's parliament says President George Weah's government is trying to kill him. We'll also get reaction from the Liberian government. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. As the world's attention focuses on the coming U.S. election, another important vote for a key position is generating controversy in Africa. Chadian politician Moussa Faki Mahamat is running unopposed for re-election as chairperson of the African Union Commission. Critics say his run is undemocratic and are seeking an extension of the nomination deadline to November. VOA's Anita Powell
reports
from Johannesburg. The uncontested
race has provoked outrage from observers of the 55-member African Union, who say the AU is failing to represent the needs of the continent's 1.3 billion people. Critics of the Ethiopia-based organization are lobbying for the vote to be postponed for at least 6 months to let more candidates come forward. Moussa Faki Mahamat, the former foreign minister of Chad, has held the post since 2017. Safo Abubrese, author of a petition by the Coalition of Supporters Unions of Africa, says the AU postponed the vote 4 years ago when there were only three candidates for that seat. At the time, the AU said that wasn't enough. Abubrese spoke to VOA from Accra via Google Hangouts.
How come that 4 years down the line, at the same time, we are having only one candidate? And people are telling us that that is representative enough. If three wasn't representative enough, how can one be representative enough? How can we go this way when we are preaching democracy throughout all the 55 African countries?
Analyst Liesl Lovaudrin of the Institute for Security Studies says this vote, cast by African heads of state, not by the general population, is important.
It's a very important position. The AU Commission chairperson also has to represent the continent on the world stage, basically, when it comes to Africa's relations with the European Union, with China, with the US, with the UN. And he has quite a lot of leeway, I would say, although the African Union is an intergovernmental organization, so which means it's not the EU where, you know, the organization can actually tell member states what to do.
That's why, says Pan-African activist Daniel Mbonu, it's critical to get a leader who truly represents the continent. Mbonu says he supports the petition to delay the vote. He spoke to VOA from Nairobi via Google Hangouts.
He has displayed a lot of incompetency in the organization and running of the African Union organization. At the same time, he has been unable to address issues that are facing people of African descent around the world. And there have been allegations of massive fraud at the African Union, corruption, nepotism. Over the years, we have seen that the African Union has failed to attain the objectives that it was founded on.
So if not Mahamat, then who? Critics say one candidate, the AU's former ambassador to the U.S., a Zimbabwean national, has been sidelined after she was removed from that position last year. Both critics also allege the AU has been heavily influenced by former colonial leader France. Since 2002, four of the five commission chairpersons have come from Francophone nations. Again, Abubrese.
Just by the uproar that came around after, you know, the purported sack of Madame Marikana Shechiobodipam, I would say, and my organization says, that Faki Mahamat is a failure. He is not somebody that should lead Africa for another 4 years.
AU members have not been able to meet in person in recent months because of the global coronavirus pandemic. Abubrese says the petition to delay the election has garnered 16,000 signatures. If granted, the vote will be moved to early 2021. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Ethics Committee of the Tanzania National Electoral Commission has summoned presidential candidate of the main opposition Chadema Party to appear before the body today, Tuesday. This after Tundu Lissu accused the Electoral Commission of colluding with the government to rig the October 28 presidential election. The Electoral Commission has often denied accusations of bias in favor of incumbent President John Magufuli and his governing Chama cha Mapinduzi Party. Faraja Lugome is a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam. He tells viewers Peter Clotty that it is unlikely that the commission will take the drastic decision of preventing Tundu Lissu from participating in the coming elections.
My view is, in fact, the call is unfair because there is a public concern about the election management body. The director of the elections of the National Electoral Committee, he once vied for the parliamentary seat in Butiama, Mara. So he's an avid and staunch CCM member since then. You find that he's also converting Tanzanians to vote for the president and not a candidate who just speaks blah, blah. And in that case, we are questioning the neutrality of the director of the elections, whether he is objective or not, because he has already shown he's the member of the ruling party, CCM.
Some people are expressing concern that the statement of accusations against the Tanzania Electoral Commission could undermine the country's peace and stability, as well as the credibility of the upcoming elections. And that is why it was important for Tundu Lissu to provide proof of his accusations. Do you think these criticisms are fair?
In one way, they can be fair. On the other way, they cannot be fair. He might not have sufficient proof to justify his statement. But if you judge his statement or his complaint based on the context or the circumstances, we can say his accusations are fair now, because for a long time, we have been complaining that the returning officers, who are the appointees of the president? So if that's the case, it means the same person appointed by the sitting president is also the returning officer of the upcoming general election. In that case, we say there is a danger of being substandard or working under the orders of the incumbent president. And that's why we say this threatens the credibility and the fair decisions of the National Electoral Commission if the same people who are appointed by the president are the ones who will be running or will be managing all the issues related to the general election.
Do you think the Ethics Committee of the National Electoral Commission in Tanzania would be able to bar Tundu Lissu from participating in the election for these allegations?
Yes, in fact, even though he has given these serious allegations, but I don't think they will be confident enough or they will have courage to bar him from contesting or from continuing with the campaign, because that will automatically bring chaos and disrupt the peace and tranquility of the nation. So with that sense, I think they will be a bit cautious or careful with any kind of decision that will be made against Lissu. So I don't think if they will be able or if they will be courageous to do that.
Faraja Lugome is a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam. He was speaking to viewers Peter Clotty. The United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, UNCTAD, estimates that illicit financial flows out of Africa are costing the continent $89 billion every year, robbing its people of much-needed money for development. In its just-released Economic Development in Africa Report 2020, UNCTAD is calling for international action to crack down on this illegal crime. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN economists say the vast sums of money flowing out of Africa through illegal, corrupt practices are undermining progress made by African countries to achieve the UN Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. They say the scale and scope of illicit capital flight which is equivalent to 3.7% of Africa's gross domestic product, and the economic consequence of COVID-19 threatened to reverse gains made in health, education, and other areas. Speaking by video link from Lagos, Nigerian Vice President Oluyemi Osinbajo warns the illicit financial flows out of Africa undermine the foundations of democracy, provide the financial incentives for terrorist activities, and fuel conflict on the continent.
The enormity of efforts required to tackle illicit financial flows is evident in the many dimensions the scourge presents itself. It manifests through harmful tax policies and practices, abusive transfer pricing, trade mispricing and misinvoicing, illegal exploitation of natural resources, as well as official corruption and organized crime.
UNCTAD reports the annual $89 billion outflows from Africa are nearly as much as the combined total annual inflows of official development assistance and foreign direct investments. UNCTAD Secretary General Mukisa Kituyi says Africa needs an estimated $200 billion a year to achieve the SDGs, but only about half that amount is available. He says illicit financial flows represent a major drain on capital and revenues in Africa, and this puts development prospects on the continent at risk.
Countries with high illicit financial flows invest about 25% less in health, 58% less in education than comparable countries on the continent. And half of the countries in sub-Saharan Africa do not have sufficiently developed domestic transfer pricing rules and regulations in the jurisprudence.
This, he says, presents a handicap for governments that have limited capacity to challenge multinational enterprises in their domestic courts on these illegal practices. The report finds tackling capital flight and illicit financial flows would provide a large potential source of money to finance investments in infrastructure, education, health, and productive capacity. UNCTAD economists say curbing illicit capital flight could generate enough capital by 2030 to finance nearly half of the $2.4 trillion needed by sub-Saharan African countries for climate change adaptation and mitigation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Tuesday, September 29th. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta Monday announced new measures in the country's fight against the COVID-19 pandemic. This includes extension of the curfew for another 60 days and the lifting of the ban on the sale of alcohol in bars. Meanwhile, workers of Kenya's largest referral hospital went on strike yesterday, Monday. Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi.
Addressing the National Coronavirus Conference at the International Convention Center in Nairobi, President Kenyatta said the nationwide curfew will begin from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. starting today. President Kenyatta also removed the ban on the sale of alcohol in bars. Also beginning today, bars will now remain open until 10 p.m. local time.
I direct and announce as follows. One, that the nationwide curfew enforced throughout the territory of the Republic of Kenya is extended for a further 60 days. Two, that the commencement time for the nationwide curfew is varied from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Three, that the prohibition against the operation of bars and the prohibition against the sale of alcoholic drinks and beverages by ordinary restaurants and eateries shall stand vacated with effect from the 29th of September 2020.
Mr. Kenyatta, however, said learning institutions should remain closed and reopen only when it is safe to do so.
The lives of our children and their health is not a matter for debate. Learning institutions, therefore, should only be reopened when we have and can sufficiently guarantee the safety of all our children. And here, I really would plead with Kenyans, let us not focus ourselves on when schools will reopen, but how shall these schools open in a manner that protects our children and protects their lives and their health.
In a related development, doctors and nurses at the Kenyatta National Hospital, the country's biggest referral hospital, went on strike yesterday, Monday, to push for better wages. The workers want the government to implement a new organizational structure, including pay adjustments agreed to in 2012 when the Kenyatta National Hospital was upgraded to a top-tier parastatal. The Secretary General of the Kenya National Union of Nurses, Seth Panyako, beseeched the president to use his executive powers to alleviate the problem.
Your Excellency, the President of the Republic of Kenya.
Yes.
Honorable Mikai Uhuru Kenyatta.
Yes.
We beseech you, as the workers of Kenyatta National Hospital, to look into our plight and use your executive power to alleviate this problem.
The Salaries and Remuneration Commission, mandated to advise civil servants' salaries, told VOL late Monday that the categorization did not include salary review. The strike is the latest obstacle to Kenya's fight against the coronavirus outbreak, currently with 38,168 confirmed infections and 700 deaths. President Kenyatta urged Kenyans to exercise personal responsibility in adhering to safety protocols outlined by the Health Ministry. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
A new report presented to Sierra Leone President Julius Magabio shows egregious corruption by public officials of the previous administration, according to Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Swari. He says the report follows an investigation by the Commission of Inquiry into Public Corruption. But supporters of the former administration say this is yet another attempt by President Bio's government to use state institutions to prosecute perceived political enemies. VOA's Peter Clote spoke with Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Swari.
The president noted that this was a continuation of his war against corruption, which he pledged to do. War against corruption being one of them. He noted that public service is an opportunity for one to serve your country honestly, diligently, and sincerely, and not to appropriate to yourself what is meant for the public good. He used that opportunity to send a loud and clear message to serving officials that the days of business as usual are gone and over forever. He stressed that his administration will fully implement the approved recommendations as contained in the white paper, and that anybody who dares to stand in the way of the implementation will face the fullest force of the law. This is indeed a new day. It's indeed a new dawn for democratic accountability and transparency. This is the time the people of Sierra Leone must win the president's trust.
So, Mohamed, what were some of the key findings in the report that he just received?
Peter, amongst the key findings were egregious corruptions. It was found out that state assets were literally auctioned to members of the previous administration, their cronies, friends, and family members at giveaway prices, even on to the eve, 2 days to the eve of the runoff elections, which President Bio won. It also emerged that contract prices, including fertilizers, were scandalously increased to a point that ordinary farmers who were meant to benefit from fertilizers to support government's food self-sufficiency drive were hoodwinked, they were robbed in broad daylight.
What were some of the recommendations contained in this report?
Peter, there were principally two recommendations, because the whole essence of the Commissions of Inquiry, as always espoused by His Excellency President Bio, was to ensure that we end impunity in governance. When you are called to public service, he insists, it is to serve the will of the majority of the people diligently, honestly, and sincerely, and not to use your position to appropriate public goods for private ends. So basically, the commission recommended restitution. Those who have looted state resources should be made to refund them within 90 days. It also emerged that some people will lose property. Yeah, very expensive property, which the commission found was incommensurate with their official emoluments. People belonging to that category include the former president, Dr. Ernest Bai Kruma, the former minister of education, now disease, Binkai Luba, and a whole lot of others. So this has been a trial of all times.
Mohamed Rahman Swari is Sierra Leone's information minister. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clote from Freetown. In Liberia, a member of the House of Representatives is blaming the government of President George Weah for an early Monday morning attack on his residence. Yeke Koluba, a staunch critic of President Weah, says government supporters attacked his residence as part of an attempt to get rid of him after he refused their overture to join the ruling Congress for Democratic Change.
I'm being attacked on so many occasions by the government, and they want to take away my land. Ten people to my house, you are aware, they're being fired at my house, they're being liable at my house. And they succeed, they've been trying to give me money to join the ruling party. I have said to them, no, I'm not going to compromise the liberal vote interest. So yesterday, I was invited to face a location of Honorable Taylor. So while we were there, I received a call like there was a city mayor passed by my house and said, this is the house I live in. I always insult the president. So he instructed a boy for the MCTC, my former bodyguards, and some of the MCT people to take down the roof of my house. So when I got the information, they started to go there, to go on the whole road at my house. I left the district, so I was in Kira. When I got there, it was very, very embarrassing. I just saw rats from all over for sedition. One of the instructions of the president of this country to the city mayor, and they should take away my left. So people tried getting the police wouldn't come. In an hour down, the police came at my first junction. While the police were there, the people in the face of the police, people put tires on the road and let the fire. In the face of the police, they started to jump right over my house that they want to take away my left. So it was not easy. We traveled all day, no way. So when they saw that they couldn't come to my house, they decided not to use the police. Now the police came and started arresting my security. One, his name is Bob Morris, from the Dynamite Unit of the Liberal National Police Headquarters, who took instruction from the Democratic Party to make way for the citizens to come and take away my life. I had to arrest my security when I saw the situation. But I had to leave my house. I was so upset in the morning. I had to run away from my life.
I guess the question is, why would anyone want to attack or vandalize the home of a member of the House of Representatives?
I refuse to be compromised by this president or this regime. I refuse to be bought like other people have been bought. So they have resolved not to take away my life. The government has refused to give me security. Instead, they're using the security to take away my life.
Yeke Koluba is a member of the Liberian House of Representatives and a staunch critic of President George Weah. You are speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Liberia's Minister of Information, Eugene Nnamdi, says President George Weah is a man of peace who is leading a democratically elected government. Nnamdi was reacting to claims made by a member of the House of Representatives, Yeke Koluba, that the Weah government is trying to kill him because he has refused their offer to join the ruling Congress for Democratic Change. Koluba says ruling party supporters vandalized his house early Monday morning. Nnamdi says the incident involving Representative Koluba's home was the result of a domestic dispute between Representative Koluba and one of his neighbors.
The incident that happened on the old road yesterday was one of a domestic dispute over property between Honorable Yeke and one of his neighbors that erupted into violence. The police, as the arbiter of peace in Liberia, quickly intervened, and I've just informed you that 14 persons have so far been arrested, and then one single barrel gun was also grabbed by the police. So the investigation is ongoing. Those who are arrested will be investigated and prosecuted if they are deemed culpable.
I was able to speak with Representative Koluba, and he pointed the finger at the government, saying that the government had asked him to join them because he has refused, so they're trying to get rid of him.
It's absolutely untrue, totally false. This is not a government of violence. It's a democratic government headed by Mr. Weah, who is a man of peace. It is ironic that people who persecuted war and caused violence in our country are now accusing Mr. President, who before he became president, has been a man of peace, and even as president, has exhibited the tenets of democracy, of a true leader, so much so that the opposition, you know, has won by elections in our country, have won elections in big counties, and it is a democratic country that we have. So I don't know why an incident involving two citizens fighting over land that the police came and put under control will not mean that the government is trying to hunt Mr. Yeke or anybody. This is not a government of violence. We are a government of democracy.
Eugene Nambwe is Liberia's information minister. He is speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. And that's it for this Tuesday, September 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a good day.